Welcome to Seize the GM. I'm your host, Zendad.
I'm your co-host, Jules.
And I'm Null Operations.
Have you ever had a great idea for a campaign? Do you have a bunch of friends who want to play an RPG but have no one to run it?
Do you want to see what the world is like behind the GM screen instead of in front of it? Well, we're here to help you do just that.
Each week, the three of us will be discussing various GMing topics. Terminology, maps, atmosphere, world building, you name it. So sit back and relax, and let us help you improve your art of GMing, one show at a time.
Banter. And we are entering the banter segment.
Welcome. Hi. Ooh.
Welcome back, folks.
How's everybody doing out there?
You first.
I'm doing pretty good. How about you guys? It's been a crazy week so far. It's just, I went from no working more than 8 hours, and in the last 3 days, I've worked somewhere in the ballpark of like 5.5 hours over. And I still have one more day.
So no crazy work. Hi, all the crazy work at once. Enjoy!
Yeah, well, I kind of did it to myself because I told my boss, I said, look, I've been on the overtime list before, and you guys wait until the very last possible day, and you throw all the overtime at me, trying to make me level with everybody else. And when you do that, and you try to cram 20 hours in 2 weeks, it can't be done. Physically, I can't do it.
It's doable if you have mastered the art of manipulating time and space, knocked the Doctor out, and then hijacked his TARDIS. That's possible.
Right. But they don't let me do that. So I'm stuck. So I told him, I said, look, if you get down to that point where I'm that far away from everybody else, I'm just going to come off the list. And then you're going to get screwed at the very end. So there we are. So I was real upfront with him. So I think he's front loading me so that by the end I can just like take it easy. But that's right around Christmas, which I won't really be taking it easy. So we'll see how it all pans out.
Oh,
but yeah, that's been my week so far. And recording and editing the show that went out today.
Which to those that are listening in the future was last week.
We're cutting it kind of close. We're trying to get ahead of things, but we don't have a safety net right now, guys.
Yeah.
Flying by the seat of our pants. And then, like, tomorrow night, I don't fly. I'm driving to Chicago tomorrow night to see friends for a week. So, I have no time.
Have fun.
I'm going to try. I'm going to be working and on website stuff and trying to get things like that done. And we're going to go to the zoo there because it's, like, one of the best zoos in the world.
Well, may the traffic be light and the idiots non-existent?
It's Chicagoland. Idiots are just kind of the nature of driving in that congested of a place.
Anywhere.
Yeah.
We want jetpacks.
It's like that. It's the same thing as around DC.
If I don't trust other humans in cars, why would I trust them with jetpacks?
Because the explosions would be really fun to look at. Like, look, if we can't deal with safety and
she has a point.
Yeah, you know, people can't be bothered to give a damn about their own safety and the safety of their fellow man. At least make the explosions so we can be entertained by them.
I'm gonna have to agree with her on that one.
I have too many trees near my
house. So what have you guys been up to? So what have you been up to this week?
Well, one of my coworkers is going on medical leave, so I'm learning his stuff, which is a lot of stuff, and I'm paranoid. It's just like, oh great, I just deleted the internet. Not my fault. You know, it's the first time you're doing something new like that, so we got that. But let's see, this past weekend, went out hiking with some family. That was fun. Trying to figure out Zippy's Halloween costume because his department decided, oh yeah, let's do a theme. And what is their theme? Disney. And they're thinking, oh, you know, like classic Disney. And those of you that have seen and met Zippy doesn't really fit any of the classical Disney anythings, you know. So
I have something here.
I'm talking classic Disney, you know, yep. Like early stuff that kind of annoys the living crap out of me.
Yep.
But I found a loophole. Because if I recall correctly, I'm not 100% sure, but pretty much knowing him, he'll be able to argue it. But, you know, I'm like, well, no. All right, if they're doing this, and then I'm pulling, I'm like, hell, go with Dustin Hoffman's Hook. Might not be exactly Disney, but he could pull it.
That's what I was just going to say was Captain Hook.
Mm-hmm. So. But the younger one, it was... You know, in the cartoon, way, way, way over the top, and that's really not him. He's much more not. He can be, but I mean, that kind of blind rage and hatred, just out of control and whacked, I'm like, no, that doesn't fit him. It's much more of the sick, sly, calculating thing that works better.
Yeah.
So, you know, the other thing is like, you know what, if worse comes to worse, Disney owns Marvel, and Disney owns the Muppets, and Disney owns a whole heck of a... And Star Wars, so go nuts. You know, they said was Disney, I'm like, okay, you know what? You might be able to work with that a little bit. They might be saying, oh, classic Disney, because... I don't know. Mm. But, I'm like, yeah, but if they just said Disney and haven't qualified it, that should help. So if any of you guys got any ideas, hey, bring them in.
Yeah.
So how about you, Gardemange? What have you been up to?
Oh, the usual, working too much, cooking too much, and just kind of trying to keep myself out of trouble. We've got a birthday coming up, so I'm kind of dreading all of those wonderful, wonderful experiences that are bound to happen. We've got my lovely wife's birthday just happened, and so... gotten to celebrate twice in short order is always a good thing, but, you know, keeping your head above water and trying to get ready for the fun new season of television.
I love Netflix, so... the thing is, like, when things usually come on, or what days they come on, or times, I can it's terrible, so I can never, like... watch something because, oh, this is the night I'm recording, or this is the night we go climbing, you know. When we were doing climbing, when we were getting ready around, like, the holidays and stuff like that, when we actually had a safety net, we were climbing on Thursdays, and it was great. But our climbing buddies had to make sure they were like, okay, we gotta be home by, I think it was, like, 9:30 or something like that, I can't remember exactly, so they could watch Critical Role. And I'm like, oh, good grief. Now, oh, God, YouTube and Twitch and, oh, man, that, yeah, time-sensitive stuff there, too.
Yeah. 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 Well, you know, but that's all good because instead of that, what we are going to be talking about, not TV show, but some TV shows have it, is the tone and mood of horror.
That segue felt forced, but
that's
we still love
it. Was. But hey, it wouldn't have been if you hadn't called it out.
We talked about what horror was last time, but what kind of tone and mood are you going to create? How do you create it at the table, in the game, and how do you create it at the table for the players? And these are two different components, but horror is one of the genres that benefits most from maintaining a certain mood at the table for the players to influence how they react as characters.
Oh, does it ever?
Mm-hmm.
Because, yeah, if you're not careful and you let too many jokes fly or whatever, it will totally kill a mood at the table that you're trying to attain.
Unless you're able to turn that also around, you know, that whole false sense of security, and let them start believing, oh, everything's going to be okay, because that can actually, it's a subversion of the tone itself, and it's so much better when you crash them and destroy them by doing something horrible. Because, you know, dead body jokes, you know, they'll start making them, and then you do something absolutely horrible, and then, you know, all the jokes they've been making, if you're good and you can actually pick up on the theme of some of the jokes, and then you just have something terrible, and it completely subverts what they were trying to do. It's a little difficult, but when you can pull it off, it was phenomenal.
Yeah, because that is part of the trick, is you have to... Horror games take a special level of awareness. Like, you really have to focus on watching the players at your table, because they will actually help you, unbeknownst to them most of the time, how to keep that mood and tone going, because you're reading what they're ready for. And you may have just bullet points, because anytime I've run horror stuff, I usually only have bullet points. I don't have like a super structured, this happens, then this happens, then this happens. Because horror, as a general rule, needs to have a certain level of flexibility to it, more so than other styles of game.
Mm-hmm. The thing is that keeping tone is, you also have to know where people are coming from. You know, older, younger, what kind of things do they talk about that kind of like skeeved them out a little bit? Like, you know, older, you know, certain things might be like, eh, but it's completely and totally normal now. So like your younger crowd, that's not gonna make them feel a little weird. Word choice. Weird, strange pauses when you're speaking. I'm not talking William Shatner style, you know.
That's a different thing. Twin Peaks.
Yes, it's pretty much what you want to do in horror, if you can, is in robotics, there's the term of the uncanny valley. And because it goes from a robot looking, and it's robotics, it's robot looking cute and human. Oh, look, it's almost people. It's cute. But once it goes from a robot that looks human to a human that doesn't look quite right because it's a robot, that's the uncanny valley. And that feeling, that skeevy, that's not quite, that weird, oh my gosh, kind of mental disconnect where you see it not as a robot, but you see it as human, but it's flawed. You know, kind of like when you see a zombie, it's like, you know, well, at least a decently done up zombie. It's like, that's human, but that's, something's not quite right. And it's kind of the reason why zombies kind of like squick us out a little bit more. And yeah. What you got to do is you put people, if inside that uncanny valley, there's a lot of discomfort, and your brain can't really get a good handle on anything. So what you'll do when they're in there, you'll push them up one side or up the other, make them feel like, oh, hey, this is better, and then drop them down in again where it's not quite right. That's the one thing. It's terrific, but you have to figure out where everyone's uncanny valley is. And you get that usually with your intro, having them set their character's tone and their interactions tone and where they're comfortable. Then you can pick up on it and figure out where you're gonna... Then you can start modulating their tone to fit your story.
Yeah. Yeah, because that is... Tone is kind of like the underlying structure that you will use to define things like the mood and the setting itself. Because as long as there's a consistent tone through the whole piece, how each character even interacts with the setting and with the mood that you're setting, not just in the game, but also at the table, because both of those are actually really important. Because you could have a great, super creepy setup, and it's all in game, but around the table, everybody is, you know, the lights are really high up and everybody's cracking jokes about whatever. And in the game, all the characters are terrified of what's happening. But around the table, everybody's just kind of giggling about it. And I actually had a game once that was... It was a dungeon crawl. And I got them so good.
Nice.
And it was hard. It really was, because they were expecting one thing and I kind of shifted it for one session. I wanted to see if I could throw more really creepy elements. So once they were in the room, I started dimming the lights so they could just kind of see what's going on. And in the background, I had things like, I had found like a YouTube channel that had like a water drip every once in a while. You know, this was before I was using Sirenscape.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have like little YouTube loops and stuff that I would play. And I found one of somebody had, it was a sound effect that somebody had taken like a bone, like a chicken bone or something, and scraped it across concrete.
Ooh.
Now, this was the... They heard something. And this was the noise. And I was just playing it. And it was really slow and drawn out. And they were like, what the hell is this? Like, they were getting freaked out by what it was. And basically what had happened was there was... An adventuring party had gone before them. And... They had set off one of the traps that was kind of like a set of spears that shot across a doorway. Well, it impaled one of the guys and it had locked him in. So what it was is the trap was trying to reset and it was dragging him across the doorway. And that was what was left of his leg bone scraping on the concrete.
Ooh.
And they were like, oh my God, what is wrong with you? And it was just like, it was perfect. And it took a lot of buildup for this one payoff scene that was literally just a story element. There was nothing to gain from it. I just wanted to push and see how receptive they were to adding more horror elements into a game, because that's one of the beauties of horror. You can throw it in just for like one session to see how they react. If they really dig it, you can start adding it to other games and more consistently. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, I think we've touched on two really important ways to work the horror tone and mood into a game. One is be patient. More than other games, horror takes time to build. We talked previously about that tension release cycle. You have to build the tension before it can be released, and you need to let something gnaw at your players. The other thing is to shift expectations, creating a mismatch between an event and the perception of what their expectation is helps create that shock, that terror, that horror that you're going for.
Mm-hmm.
You see this in common horror tropes. Think of the quiet Nebish guy who's actually the diabolical serial killer.
Yeah.
Good point. But the thing is, though, also with horror tropes, is because now that they have been used, they actually are tropes. And subconsciously, sometimes we do start to expect them. So, in a way, also, subverting the trope itself can really also, because it's like, that's not the way it's supposed to be. The serial killer is supposed to be behind the door with a knife and something else. And, you know, it's okay. Anything that you can do just to, you don't want, it's not tricking them or the idea of like getting one over, like outsmarting. It's not that kind of a feel. What you have to do is make them, you know, like, okay, because you're using the strongest thing the human brain has, your logic and your ability to analyze against them. That's the big thing. And that's that whole, you know, this isn't right, but hey, wait, now, and then you get completely confused and it screws with you. Because in horror, that's what makes it terrible, because either you're insane or the world's insane. And you being insane is sometimes better than the alternative.
I'm going to go with yes on that one.
Yeah, leave questions out there. Don't let it be answered or known. That's another significant part of horror and part of why it can raise questions we talked about before, about what does it mean to face human nature? What is humanity's place in the universe? Do we matter? That comes from not having answers.
Mm-hmm.
In the original Alien movie, which is a fantastic piece of science fiction horror.
I couldn't crawl away from the chair fast enough. I was hiding. It scared me.
See? The xenomorph works because you never see it clearly. They shot scenes with the xenomorph, fully lit, able to be seen, and they looked at it and they said, doesn't work.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it in the shadows. Keep it hidden. Keep things left to be filled in by the imagination, and you create or allow to be created something far more powerful for this kind of a story.
Which is actually, Hitchcock was notorious for that.
Really?
He would show just enough
that
you were filling in the blanks. He didn't have to show you everything. He mm-hmm. showed you just enough to let your mind fill it all in and made it way more horrifying because you know what you're afraid of.
Mm-hmm. Our id will scare us more than anything that we show on the screen because it knows us better than anything else.
Psychologically, we evolved in such a way that fight or flight is the most useful response we have. And so when you're put under pressure and don't have an answer and going through a fight or flight response, we're trying to figure out why.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And in those moments, it's going to be heightened and you get that response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And Zen talked about this earlier. Turn down the lights in the room where you're playing. Take a couple of light bulbs out if you have to. If you're playing in a particular setting, have something that kind of creates a smell that evokes that setting, because that will trigger your player's sensory involvement much more. If you're on the beach and this is a setting happening on a deserted island, figure out a way to get the smell of salt water in the air.
Or old rotting fish.
I got to be careful on that one because I don't want to die.
The smell.
The smells shouldn't be something that is too
but
wretched.
But wet wood. Wet wood works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a tongue twister. Or incense, wood smoke. And here's the other thing. You can actually put in what you want to do later on. So say you're doing it at an old abandoned campground, you know, and, you know, you're getting stuff ready and you know, you've got stuff cooking for dinner and dessert you're going to have, like, later on in the game. All right, you're in that. You might have, like, that smell of wood smoke. But in the oven, you're baking a pie. You know, that sugary smell of marshmallows and chocolate. Little things like that. And smell is the biggest thing tied to memory. And a lot of our horror things that scare us come from memories when we were much, much, much younger.
Yeah.
So if you can, the things like you can actually pull stuff like that to kind of start like needling as you're, it builds into what you're talking about. If you're trying to get like kind of sci-fi and you're trying to go with a extremely sterile kind of a feel, this is going to sound, it sounds absolutely silly, but I have done this. Is you know, on the tablecloth, you spritz it with a little bit of alcohol and witch hazel, just enough to get that almost sterile scent.
Yeah,
you know, have food. Oh yeah, and the thing is, it's like, you know, the idea with the lights. Something you can also do is, you know, tea light candles, or you know, because you can get the little ones that don't have real flames because people are clumsy. But if you're trying to go,
highly recommend the not real flames.
Oh yes. But, you know, have a candle. There are actual candles out there now that are crackle. They're supposed to mimic like wood popping and crackling.
Wood wicks.
And I have one of those, and it's great. One, the smell is phenomenal because it's that kind of like wood smoky kind of spicy scent, and the light is it's not constant. It kind of flickers. And something you can do, and I have done this, and no one realized I had done it until after they were leaving, is I'll put stuff up around in the room and I will have like tea lights or something else kind of light behind it or in front of it or something like that. So shadows are cast, either fuzzy or sharp, depending on what I want. You know, and that's something that's like, you know, it's something that would look, if you're playing at the kitchen table, you know, you have all these wonderful kitchen utensils. Now, what can you use with them?
Yeah.
You know, I did some horrible things with the spatula. You know, it's like at a certain time, I had actually set it up. So, because the sun was going to be setting. And it came behind and it came through the back door. And where I had set it up, you know, I'm talking. And then as the sun goes through it, those shadows of the bars on the spatula hit my face. Just for a little bit. And it creeped everyone out.
Yeah.
I had to watch where my timing was, but I had set it up the day before and tested it to see, okay, when is it going to come in and da-da-da. So there's a lot of weird stuff, but the thing is you can't be in their face about it. It's subtle. And as Garde-Manger said, you have to be patient. You can't, I know you guys really want to freak your players out, but the thing is, they're waiting for you. They know that, okay, this is not going to be easy. You know, we're kind of, oh my gosh. But they have to start building themselves up. And then you just start poking them. You don't have to be crazy about it.
Just no, usually the less you poke, the more they start to play on their own fears.
Mm-hmm.
And when you, no, there's nothing unusual. That will creep players out more than going, oh yeah, there's this giant monster that's right over here.
Mm-hmm. But the thing is also is, and Zen, you just nailed it right there. It's like, no, there's nothing wrong in this room. It's fine.
Yeah.
You're safe. Tone is just not of the game, but your tone of voice.
Cadence.
Something. Oh yeah. And Garde-Manger, you have that theater background. I know that, you know, what is something, is such more sinister. It's like you have somebody screaming in your face, or that cold, dead, icy tone. Normally, when you hear that cold, dead, icy tone, that scares somebody more than a big, rawr, scary monster.
I don't think you quite understand exactly what you have walked into here.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Then the other thing is also is juxtaposing something that is completely and totally from your childhood, like, or theirs, that is innocent, you know? But, you know, like nursery rhymes and Ring Around the Rosie. Like when we were kids, there was nothing sinister about that. When you hear it as an adult, it scares the daylights out of you.
Well, it's more that as time goes, you learn more of what was why, like for the that particular nursery rhyme. Like we didn't live in the time that it was made. So as a child, we didn't understand the true implication of what it was. Yeah. It was something we learned.
Yep. But then you get like wink and blink and a nod or... oh gosh, there's like not even the nursery rhymes with, and it works even better when the nursery rhymes do not have sinister or dark undertones. You know, London Bridge is falling down. Yeah, that's kind of creepy. You know, but you get some of the ones that are much more lighter sounding in an area that is just abject horror, and people are wondering what corrupted this, and their mind is going to go.
And that goes to what I was talking about earlier in shifting expectations, taking something and making it not match. So as you think about how to maintain your tone and mood for a horror game, look at where you're playing. Take the chance and the time to darken it a little bit. Cast more shadows. Make sure something immerses your players. Be patient in your game. Let the tension build. Create something that doesn't fit. Create the juxtaposition, like Jewel said, to let you have them prey on themselves.
Yep.
And the one thing also, the most important thing, though, you always, no matter what you're doing, is you remember, we're all still doing this to have fun. We're here to be scared out of our pants, but in a safe, you know, you're with your friends, you're with your gaming group. So, I mean, like, that you also have to watch your players is, all right, it's like, so you, okay, I can't push anymore because at one point it stops being fun and it's no longer about building tone and everyone's just miserable.
Yeah.
So you do have to watch it there.
And that is your preview for next week where we talk about what it means and how you recognize when you're pushing a horror game too far with your players.
Mm-hmm.
So, next, we're going to go ahead and dive right into our next topic, which is... And now we enter Stat Blocks. This is a segment where you can use something that we've created in your game tonight.
All right, who's going first on this one?
Garde-Manger.
Zen.
I get it out first.
Eeny, meeny, hasselahas. Who goes first?
I'll go ahead and go.
Yay!
Your
stuff scares me. I love it.
Tommy. Tommy's a fixture at the bars and taverns around town. You've seen him a dozen times, easily just hanging out on his own or with a few friends. He's got a classic style, always seems to have perfect hair. His deep blue eyes seem to stand out, even from across the room, giving him a very distinctive appearance. It's actually kind of frustrating. You don't know what he does during the day. He won't talk about his job. His focus is on you. And your life, with those blue eyes boring into your soul. It's always good to see Tommy. He keeps the jokes going, listens with a practiced ear, and buys around probably a little more often than he has to. He has his fingers on the pulse of the scene and can point you in the direction of the next big band, restaurant, bar. Except you don't actually remember ever seeing Tommy eat a meal or take that shot that he bought for the table. You see, Tommy isn't human. He doesn't eat or drink like we do. He's managed to blend into the fabric of the city without anyone ever digging into his past, or lack thereof. As the night goes on and you get tired, Tommy seems to keep perking up like a second, third, or even fourth wind comes his way. What does Tommy eat? I mean, is he a vampire? Does he leech your psychic energy, or maybe he's just a regular old alien needing some exotic foodstuffs? But one way or another, you're going to find out when unexplained fires and accidents begin to plague the city. What does Tommy know? Why is he suddenly looking over his shoulder every night?
Oh, that was so good.
Oh, damn.
That was good. This is going to be funny. So
why?
Just you'll see. Jules, go.
Well, I've got two actually. So A or B. I will have you gents pick which one I'm going to do.
Yes.
Go with A. Save B for next time.
All right. A is called, well, it's the Well of Desperation. So many fairy stories tell of magical wells that grant wishes, hide incredible treasure, or reveal great secrets. Ah, if the world only knew the truth. All of these stories stem from one well, the Well of Desperation, or the Well of Desperate Knowledge. The devil's bargain if there ever was one. The well can indeed provide the seeker with an amazing fortune, grant their heart's desire, or reveal the secrets of the universe. But things come at a price. You see, the well knows all. Knowledge cosmic and knowledge intimate. So if it must give up its secrets, then you must as well. And the choice isn't up to you. Oh no. The well knows that which you have tried to hide. It knows your blackest thoughts and craven actions. The beating heart in the floorboards, hands stained with blood. Back alley deals and secret affairs. It knows them all. So if you demand that the well tell its secrets and share its treasures, the well will be sure that the world knows your secrets as well. It's truly a terrible price. Your hidden shame will be known to all, and the tip of the tongue in the front of the mind of all who you meet. The prudent path, the wise choice, don't take the deal. Keep your secrets, for they are worth far more than any reward the universe can offer. Silence is golden, is it not?
Cool.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Excellent.
All right, so what's yours, dude?
Sophia Beaumont. Sophia is the owner of, operator of this kind of specialty dive bar. It's a place that caters to the darker elements of the city. Now, why would any woman actually rule in a place like this? Well, the thing is, she's a little more than what she seems. By day, she's a mild-mannered office worker. Ah, but by night, she leads a punk band of vampires. Now, wait a second, I hear you say. How is it that vampires can be in the sun? I never said she was a vampire. Succubi are not your normal creatures, nor are they true demons. They're more like corrupted souls that house a splinter of the dark. What do they need to survive? Some say they feed on sexual energy or the tension that they create from that. The truth is, they don't need any of that. They eat like regular people. But the darkness is always hungry.
Here's the thing, guys. None of us planned it, but all of our stuff kind of fits into that kind of, oh, yeah. God.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, man. That's scary, dudes. How the hell did we do that?
We do that a lot.
Just wait till next week. Yeah, I was gonna say, just wait till next week. I've got something brewing.
So, yeah,
it's gonna be scary.
All right, let's flip over to the next thing.
Lexicon, where we give you
cool words to help improve your vocabulary.
See what I did there? I'm a punny guy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's well, dad joke thing. You mean, it comes with the territory with you, don't it?
I so love it, though.
You know what that is, Zen?
It's
our punishment.
It is. Yes.
Oh, heaven help us all.
All right.
No, heaven's abandoned us.
All right.
Does that mean you're about to punt it, Jules?
I'm not saying anything. I can't punt. I'm not very good at it.
Well, we'll move on to the actual word here. And it is not pun. It is Kendine. Which
Kendine.
It's an adjective. And the definition for it is deserved or appropriate. So like a Kendine punishment would be a deserved or appropriate punishment for like a crime committed. It's one of those words that's like used in like the bottom 40%. And it is, let's see, the origin is, it actually comes from Latin originally and then makes its way all the way into like Middle English, which Middle English is condine. And that comes from Anglo-French and from Latin, which is condignus or from and worthy.
Okay, I was wondering how it was spelled.
C-O-N-D-I-N-G. Or D-I-T-N. My mistake.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a weird...
Okay, yeah, now that history makes sense.
Yes.
With worth. With...
Yep.
Got it. Okay.
So, yeah, it's a weird little word. It's in the 40%... Bottom 40%. I generally try to find words that are in like the bottom 50% of what normally is spoken. I really like the ones that are in like the bottom 20. But this one was like, it's kind of cool. And I haven't done this one yet. So I threw it in there.
So yeah. I've never heard that one before.
Yeah, it was a little weird. So, all right. Well, folks, I think we are going to hit these shout outs because we are just rocking this one tonight.
Well, this topic is something we all kind of know, all really enjoy. And, you know, and the thing is, we wanted to bring it to you, I think, really sharp. Yeah. So.
All right. Well, so shout outs. Who's got something?
We all have something. I'll go first. Okay, as always, I am a gamer. Everyone knows that. Video games, tabletop, you name it. Now, there is a Steam game out there, and it is absolutely ridiculous. It is called The Guild of Dungeoneering. It's funny as heck. It's a deck-building card weird thing. So you have, like, your little guy, and they go into a dungeon. And it's just silly. Because, well, your first guy that you get is a chump. You know, you originally were part of this really nice guild, and then they treated you like crap, at least in your opinion, Bunny Rabbit Ears. So you stole the money and started up your own guild called the Guild of Dungeoneering. So you put out posters, the first thing you get is a chump, and then you can build other buildings to recruit other different types of guys. But the thing that makes this great is there is this kind of bardic troubadour guy, and it's just, they sing the whole time, you know, like when you're on the intro screen, and then when you die, the guy sings, or when you go out to one of the dungeons, he does like this little singy intro. And one of the things he's actually kvetching about, you know, do you know how hard it is to try and rhyme everything? So, It's delightful. It really is delightful. It's kind of D&D. And the best thing about it is, as you're putting up like as you're building the dungeon or you're building your guild, the background's graph paper. And as it comes up, it sounds like, you know, somebody's sketching with a pencil. It was delightful.
That's fun.
I love the sound. Absolutely love the sound of the pencil scritching against paper. It's one of the reasons I still use pencils.
Oh yeah. And they look like pencil sketches, you know, or you know, it's crudely drawn, intentionally so.
Oh, that's fun.
And yeah. Check it out. I mean, just check out the videos. They're funny. And I think you guys would like the music because the bard sometimes sounds very exasperated.
As well he
and
would
be. And that's funny to me. And for me, that's funny. All right, who's next? Who's next?
I went first with Statblock, so that more means than happy to. Zen goes next.
I actually, the other day, I got to watch... I have two, though, but they're connected. So you'll have to forgive me because I am an X-Men junkie. And I actually started watching The Gifted. Which,
okay,
it does. It's really,
got a
it's
lot
set
of promise.
In the theory of it's after the mutants, yeah, like all of that
after Days of Future
has
Past
taken place.
Movie,
it's like the X-Men have disappeared. Nobody knows what's going on, and they're there. Just dealing with the fallout. And it's interesting. I'm curious to see where it's going to go. The first episode is the only one that's been out so far. So hopefully it keeps going. And the other one, if you know X-Men at all, is the Inhumans.
I
watched the first two episodes. And I have a feeling that it is going to some really, really good places. Because it's set in the time frame when the Inhumans left the moon. Now, if you've...
Because the thing is, like, the Immortals, I always thought would be very difficult to pull off right. You know what I mean?
They've...
I love the Immortals.
They've...
Medusa I always
pulled,
liked.
Oh, yeah. This is a story that's not about... It is the story of the war for the throne.
We know from the ads that... Black Bolt's brother's around, and Maximus trying to get the throne is the archetypal Inhuman story. So, I will watch. I've got my doubts. I've not been happy with what I saw from about Medusa's hair from
give
the
it,
shots. But
give it.
I'll
you
give it
have
a try.
To get
I'm
into
give it
the
try.
Second episode. I'm just gonna say you have to get into the second episode, and things will change.
I'm gonna give it a try.
So
I agree with you about The Gifted, so
it's interesting.
Give the Inhumans a try.
I can't wait to see where it ends up going. Because this is the story. If you've been reading the Royals comic, which is the Inhumans, after the Terrigen Mist is released and everything, because they're pulling things from not just the movie, they're also pulling from the current timeline in the comics, which is really interesting.
Ooh. Nice.
So they're playing around with a lot of stuff in it, so I have really high hopes for it. I think it's going to be really, really good. So yeah, that's mine. I had a twofer.
Yeah, it's still worth it.
All right, Gordo Mojay, what you got?
All right, to wrap up, wrapping up the recommendations this week, after last week talking about a movie that examines and deconstructs horror tropes, we're going to go with some classic old-school comic book horror here, and I'm going to recommend that you pick up the reprinting of EC's first volume of Tales from the Crypt. This is the comic book that the comic book that inspired the show. This is the comic book that is part of why we have problems with comic books, because of its content. This is classic horror, golden age writing and art that has kind of those Aesop's fables or Henry twists with people getting comeuppance. It's really a piece of work you should read and observe the visual storytelling and the pacing to kind of inform what we talked about earlier about tone and mood of horror. And so we'll put a link in the doodly-doo, as it was reprinted and reissued a few years ago by Dark Horse Comics. And with that...
How did I not know about that?
They've got like four volumes.
I love Tales from the Crypt. I did not know that they've got a reprint. Oh my... Oh well, goodbye paycheck. And goodbye a weekend, because I'm going to lock myself up and read them.
They're on sale. You can get like the first three volumes for less than $100.
Wow.
In hardcover.
Nice.
Wow. That's cool. All right. Well, until next week, folks. Have a good one.
Talk to you later.
Stay frosty, chums.
You can contact us or the show by using Twitter, Facebook, or regular old email. Our Twitter accounts are at Zended,
at Jules Podcaster,
and at No Operations.
And the show's Twitter account is at Seize the GM.
And you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/SeizeTheGM.
You can email questions or comments to the show at admin@SeizeTheGM.com.
You can email me at zended@seizethegm.com.
Me at jules@seizethegm.com.
And me at nulloperations@seizethegm.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Seize the GM. Feel free to leave a comment about this episode on our webpage, www.seizethegm.com. Let the dice fall where they may, and we'll see you again next week.
Seize the GM is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 4.0 International License. All copyrighted materials referenced herein are held by the respective owners. No infringement is intended, and no claim of ownership is implied.
The music for the show is Dreaming Spirit, off of the album Ghost Machine, by the Enigma TNG. His music is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0, unported license.